JazzCast Pros.
Greetings, friends. This is Pastor George Nicholas, and you're here again with our Igniting Hope podcast. We're so glad that you've taken some time today out of your busy schedule, busy life, to just share maybe about 30 minutes with us as we talk about some very important issues that impact the life of people of African descent who live here in Western New York, who are struggling with Alzheimer's and dementia. My mother has been diagnosed with dementia. And so here's a woman who was a very vibrant person, in good health and still in very good physical health. But the dynamics, the impact of her dementia, it's not just her struggle, but it's become a family struggle. And it's so important that we don't soldier on by ourselves. Really being Afrocentric is really being connected to one another in community, right? And a more Western thinking is more individualistic. And so we have to forget, we have to really embrace one another and seek support, not only within our extended family, but with also within our community family. Today, I have a very special guest from the Alzheimer's Association, and her name is Zadeh Dozin. And she is a part of a group that's called Caring Across Generations and trying to get people to see, those who are outside of our communities, that so many of the people who are caring for their mothers, their fathers, their grandparents, their aunties, or whoever, also have a series of their own needs. She can talk about family caregivers and the support that they need to help our elders age with dignity. You know, in the African tradition, our elders are held with the highest esteem. And those of us who have benefited from the wisdom and the love and the care of our elders, we have a moral obligation to make sure that in the august of their years, they live their lives with dignity and respect and honor. You know, of African Americans who over the age of 70, 21.3% of them are living with Alzheimer's. That's at a rate that's two times the rate of white people. So when you think about our seniors in our community, 21% of them will be struggling with Alzheimer's. And that's at a rate that's twice our white brothers and sisters. And when families, and it's really a family, when it's not only your loved one that has Alzheimer's, it's like the family has it, because the family has to address the issues and adjust their lives a little bit to be able to provide care for their loved one. And about half of African Americans who have tried to get services for their loved ones have experienced discrimination. 65% of us in our community know someone with Alzheimer's or dementia. And because of the historical racism within the healthcare system, many African Americans are fearful or are hesitant in participating in clinical trials that could really provide some breakthroughs around caring and turning back the clock a little bit at helping those who have Alzheimer's. There's no cure for Alzheimer's, but there has been some promising research that's come out with some medications that seem to be making some progress. So we need to have a conversation about this in our community. And we've had the Alzheimer's Association of Western New York has been a great partner with us at the Buffalo Center for Health Equity. And so on April 1st, we're going to have our third annual African-American Caregiving Conference. And it's entitled, It's a Family Affair. And that will be at the Frank Merriweather Library at 1324 Jefferson Avenue. And then if you log on to our website, buffalohealthequity.org, buffalohealthequity.org, there will be a way for you to direct you to, if you cannot physically make it there, to join us via Zoom. And so all that information about the conference on April 1st, it's a Saturday from 1 to 3:30, we will be having a conversation, a family meeting, around caregiving and how do we care for our loved ones who are struggling with Alzheimer's and dementia. If you want more information about Igniting Hope podcasts, please log on to our website, buffalohealthequity.org. buffalohealthequity.org, you'll see today's podcast, as well as all the other podcasts that we have done probably about the last 6 or 7 months, talking about some really important issues that are facing us in our community. So I want to bring Sade into the conversation now. And
hi, thank you so much for having me, Pastor. I appreciate it. And I will, of course, I think I'll start with saying that I'm very excited to be joining you at the 3rd Annual Black and African American Dementia Caregivers Conference that's happening in Buffalo. I will say that the easiest way to talk about my connection to the work is to kind of talk a little bit about my own care story and journey. I am a Black Latina. My mother's Puerto Rican. My dad is African American. I'm from New York. And we recently, well, not recently, I would say 4 years ago, found out that we were going to have a child. So my parents and I, we came up with a whole plan and we're like, let's move and let's make all these things, big transitions happen. The idea was that they would kind of help me care for my daughter. But my mother had a heart attack about when my daughter was about 6 months old. So I went from being a daughter to a new mom to a sandwich generation caregiver in a matter of months. And I would say that that was my first real entry point to care. I am navigating their supports as they age. I'm navigating the obstacles that we're facing within the healthcare system, within the policy landscape for services around the care infrastructure. And as I think through the support that my parents need in particular, both my mother and my father, I realized that I needed to do more. So that's how I ended up at Caring Across Generations, which is an organization that works to shift how care is valued in this country. We do that through policy work, through narrative change work, and really thinking about the intersectionalities of care. Because even in my story alone, there's support for my parents, there's the need for paid leave, there's a need for childcare, and realizing how interconnected it is in our community and how we really need to talk about the long-term supports that we need and deserve.
So when you talk about some of the obstacles and services, can you kind of share, you know, what you've experienced in terms of your own story, as well as what you're hearing from others who are in the situation where they're trying to care for their parents, grandparents, or other loved ones?
Yeah, absolutely. Both my parents are in their 70s. And when my mother had her heart attack, she was in remission from cancer for quite a while. Her heart attack really exacerbated additional issues that were occurring in her life. So she needed more immediate urgent care. Because my parents worked for the city their whole lives for years. So they were able to be in a place where they received a pension, they received Social Security, and they didn't actually qualify for Medicaid. So after my mother's heart attack and we were in the process of being discharged from the hospital, they essentially said to us, well, you know, the best thing for your mother's recovery is going to be a walker. But she can't currently walk. So she needs a wheelchair for mobility. But, you know, you can't have both. Your insurance doesn't cover both, but you need both. And that was a perfect example of the current barriers that exist within our system. And then it becomes, you know, your responsibility, right? The idea that then I have to figure out how to pay for a walker or a wheelchair, figure out, make a choice around my mother's care and decision. And that is not actually something that should fall just on me. It's the inability to afford these services. Like, she needed a care worker, but we didn't qualify for the care worker because home and community-based services are funded through Medicaid and not Medicare. So our inability to afford home care or even take paid time off to care for our loved ones isn't actually a personal failure. But the narrative that we hear so often, especially in our communities, especially in the Black and Brown communities, is you do for your own. You got to make it work. You figure it out. And it's not actually a personal failure. It's a problem of public policy and infrastructure. So it's really a systemic issue when you think about racism, barriers, intergenerational poverty, and these systemic issues actually need systemic solutions.
Yeah, so interesting that you kind of raise that at so many levels. One, because we at the Buffalo Center for Health Equity, and our mission is to eliminate race-based health disparities in our region. And when you think about the social determinants of health, and oftentimes we think of them only in the context of chronic disease, but social determinants of health really play themselves out even in our abilities and capacity to navigate through the system and being a caregiver for our loved ones. Can you kind of react to that a little bit?
There's a level of displacement and fracturing that happens within our communities, and it's a cyclical process. Our barriers to access consistent healthcare impact how we age, and then the barriers that we face as we're aging and need support for disabilities then further perpetuate that issue. I think that also ties into overall, as our community faces this progression, then there's also the idea of this cycle that kind of further pushes us into poverty. The JP Morgan, there's an article that there's a study that they published around caregiving being a decelerator of wealth. The issues are fully intersected and they further exacerbate themselves. So when we think about the systemic racism that exists within our healthcare complex, it serves as a direct barrier to access and entry for healthcare. And the fact that folks then don't have access to fair and equitable healthcare further creates strain on when they do age, they end up with additional chronic conditions. Then they then face a barrier to services to support those chronic conditions and diseases that then further creates a cycle where the family members are then having to provide full-time support or hands-on support, many of which whom are women of color who are then dropping out of the workforce, which then serves as another barrier to poverty. Like, you see what I'm saying? So as each one builds upon itself, and the root of it is anchored in those systems and the systemic issues.
So when you think about, you know, the kind of community gatherings, one of the challenges that we have from time to time is, especially as it relates to issues around mental health, the health of our aging community, aging population, palliative care, all those things that sometimes we suffer in silence. And that's why I think it's really, really important to have these kinds of events that we're going to have Saturday, April 1st at 1 o'clock for the community at the Frank E. Merriweather Library. And that's at 1324 Jefferson Avenue in the city of Buffalo. You know, a couple transparency moments I want to share with you is, you know, recently my mother has been diagnosed with dementia. And so here's a woman who was a very vibrant person, in good health and still in very good physical health. But the dynamics, the impact of her dementia, it's not just her struggle, but it's become a family struggle. And it's so important that we don't soldier on by ourselves. We kind of contradict ourselves in some ways in our behaviors when we try to claim so much Afrocentricity, and really in the center of that, really being Afrocentric is really being connected to one another in community, right? And a more Western thinking is more individualistic, and a more Eastern thinking is more community-based. And so we have to forget, we have to really embrace one another and seek support, not only within our extended family, but with also within our community family. And that's why it's so important for us to have these kinds of events.
Hey, if you're enjoying this episode, check out the Healthy Illness Podcast with me, Kelly Marie, as we build healthy relationships while living with mental health conditions.
I'm diagnosed and live with borderline personality disorder, major depression, and generalized anxiety. And despite those diagnoses, I've been able to live a full life. I have healthy relationships, a great career, and my mission is to help you do the same. So join me for Healthy Illness Podcast.
New episodes every Monday on the JazzCast Pros Network, found on the podcast player you're listening to right now. Be the light.
Greetings, everyone. My name is Ra. Yes, I am the host of Father Torch. I would like to take this time to invite you in my discussions on very, very important topics of being a Black and brown father in today's society. Being a parent, the other parent, we face trials and tribulations too. We have worries, we have feelings. Here at Father Torch, we promote the advocacy of being the dad you wish you had. Join me at fathertorch.com.
Now, when we talk about services, in another transparency moment, and I'm going to be calling on you, Sade, to have some further conversations offline, is Governor Hochul is in the process of developing a master plan for aging, for the age population here in New York State. And there are those who are experts of dealing with the age population, and somehow they asked me to be on this commission as well. So I find myself sitting in this space with these people who that's what they do on a day-to-day basis. But one of the things that was really kind of took me back a little bit is the perception of, well, people, the age population in New York State is in relatively good health. And maybe in Long Island and White Plains, or maybe in Williamsville or parts of Clarence, the more affluent areas, that maybe that's a reality. But certainly in Black and brown communities, it's not been my experience that our seniors are in relatively good health. So it's interesting when you have policymakers and others kind of have one perception of one reality based on their circle, and sometimes being kind of oblivious to the realities of people who don't live in their neighborhood or in their community.
Mm-hmm. This is actually why I think it's you should be on the committee. Family caregivers, those that are impacted by care directly, should be involved in creating the solutions, because there needs to be a centering of folks directly at the core center of the impact who move forward the work, so that, you know, this idea of everything's fine, it's not accurate. That's not fine. I think about this a lot, actually. I have generalized anxiety disorder, and then I also have rheumatoid arthritis. And my rheumatoid arthritis is quite aggressive. My doctors and I have been talking, and there's going to be a date. We're not quite sure if it's a couple of years from now, a decade from now. Can't quite figure out how to pin it, but then I'm not going to be able to function in the way that I currently do on a day-to-day basis. And then there is going to be a time after that I'm going to need full-time care and lose significant mobility. And yes, RA, going undiagnosed, being misdiagnosed, those are fairly common. I think especially if we look at the Black communities, again, because of access to healthcare, the racism embedded within the American system, it ends up being that lots of things go untreated for a very long time. So again, there's the perception of everything is fine until it is not, and you need significant, immediate, direct care. And that is something that is prevalent in our communities, where you don't know, or you don't find out, or you don't move forward with treatment until it is to the point where it is fully exacerbated. That again points back to the systemic issues. So my response is, the community is aging, and this is not going to be something that goes away. No matter how, you know, quote unquote, healthy your community is, folks are going to need care. And the current care workforce is not at a level to meet these current needs. The policies and infrastructure are not where they need to be to meet these current needs. And it is a conundrum that we are going to face and we are currently facing right now. So yes, let's do this plan of aging. Let's get some policy work. Let's make it happen right now.
And one of the things, Shadi, that in your story of your own personal challenges, coupled with your responsibility to care for your family, is not unique. It's mm-hmm. pretty much the norm. And what do I mean by that? It's been my experience that so many people who are caregiving right now have needs as well. But we have so many occurrences of the sick caring for the sick. And there's such a need for so much support to give people the kind of breathing room to just live. And so when you're thinking about improving the caregiving model, it's much more nuanced and complex because you got to really look at the entire community and environment in which the central person, the aged person who needs care, and the person that's providing the care for the aged person. And if they come from that same community with all these other disparities and historical traumas and all these things that are going on, that it really creates a real combustible model that is really not sustainable in any real way, if you think about it. I mean, we do a great job of putting on masks and doing things to make it seem like things aren't as critical as they really are. But then there becomes a point of diminishing returns, right? And so that's why it's so important for us to really be proactive and to really think about issues around caregiving, not just in the context of adding and providing more services, which are necessary, but also into creating the kind of beloved or just community, which many people, that's not their experience.
What I'll say is, you know, we're over 150 years post-slavery is about abolition, right? And care still remains to be devalued. And those that are, of course, experiencing the deepest inequities are folks of color, are Black folks, especially Black women, as we think about those that are leaving the workforce to support their families, those that are the sole providers for their families that are facing those choices. We don't actually care in silos. We don't operate in silos. And I agree, we need to talk about everything comprehensively, care comprehensively, which is why I'm pointing to the care infrastructure, including childcare, paid leave, services, supports, like it all is connected. And I faced these choices, navigating my own diagnosis, thinking about the long-term impacts that it will have for my daughter, thinking about how I support my parents. And a fleet of questions came across my mind. Do I quit my job? Do I move in with them? Do I prioritize their care over my own? And I think about my own anxiety around finances, long-term sustainability. And the worst part, I know that this isn't the way. I know that it is actually not my own individual responsibility, that it's not my family's individual responsibility. And the reason why it feels so impossible and why it feels like I'm constantly chasing after something that is unsustainable is because it is impossible. And that's kind of what keeps me going. It keeps me up at night, but also keeps me going, is that there is a clear set of policy solutions to support this. And we need to talk in our community and break those false narratives that it's just us doing this alone for ourselves, and that it needs to be a point towards the public solutions.
It's time for, you know, Black and Brown leadership to really step up and prioritize our issues. I'm so exhausted with leadership that takes time and energy and political capital, making sure the aspirations of the white community are fulfilled. And then when it comes time to the issues that are going to impact our lives, you know, we're constantly being told to wait, or, you know, it's complex, or, you know, I'm working on it, and all this other stuff. And then in the meantime, we don't see those delays happening for those who live outside of our communities. You know, here we have this experience here with the building of football stadiums and downtown development, and we see these things happening around us. And then the simple policy and investment type of things that we desperately need for us and our communities, it always seems like we're just told to wait, and there's all these excuses made for simple policy and programmatic solutions that could really have a positive impact upon the quality of our lives. Mm. What's your thought on that?
I mean, outside of yes, absolutely. You know, I think about choices a lot. Ultimately, the goal that I am working towards, that a lot of folks in the care movement are working towards, is the choice. You have the ability to choose how you are cared for and how you care, what you receive support for. That is part of it. And I feel right now that choices are being removed from us, that we inherit a system so broken that we don't even have the ability to choose. So I say, like, as a community, we need to make a collective decision to make sure that we have better choices for our world, for our community, for our care infrastructure. And the way that I do it, I choose to wield my own voice, my choice and power with caring across generations. But I think that whether it is, you know, signing petitions, participating in larger public displays, having additional language, you know, participating in calls to action, like all of those things are so key to how transformation and change is made. We have to utilize our voice. We have to be firm on those choices that we are entitled to, those choices about how we live and how we age and how we care for each other, so that we don't have the future generations inheriting these broken systems that we exist in and create these false narratives of this is how it is and this is how we're going to keep it as it is. No, we need to demand more and fight for it.
Yes. Yes. And that's what we're committed to, that work here at the Buffalo Center for Health Equity. And certainly, you know, Sade, the passion and the wisdom, knowledge that comes through in your voice today clearly shows that you are deeply committed to seeing that caregiving for family and friends, and that it operates at a level that all of us can feel comfortable, and that our loved ones are living lives, whether they're suffering from dementia, Alzheimer's, or anything, that they live their lives with dignity and respect. So I would again invite you to join us Saturday, April 1. And the no-show is April Fool's. The real fool is the person that doesn't seek more knowledge. And so we're looking for the community to come out on Saturday, April 1st at 1 o'clock. It's a family affair, our third annual African-American Caregiving Conference, sponsored by the Alzheimer's Association, Highmark of Western New York, the Erie County Department of Senior Services, Congressmember Brian Higgins, the University of Buffalo's School of Neurology, and the Center for Elder Law and Justice, and also the New York State Department of Health. So thank you so much, Sade, for spending this moment with us today. And again, if you want more information about any of our work at the Buffalo Center for Health Equity, log on to our website, buffalohealthequity.org, buffalohealthequity.org. And we'll also put on our website how you can reach the Caring Across Generations organization. And we'll put some information about them on our website as well. So I look forward to seeing you all on Saturday, April 1st at the Frank Merriweather Library. And so this is Igniting Hope Podcast. Thank you so much for being with us. And we love you. And make sure that you show your love to one another.